Welcome to the latest episode of Your Wealth with Gemma Dale, a podcast series designed to help you create, grow, and protect your wealth.
Hi, and welcome to Your Wealth. I'm Gemma Dale, NAB Trades Director of SMSF and Investor Behaviour. Today I'm talking with Liz Tian, Director of Equity Products at Citigroup, about instalment warrants. Instalments are a product structure that have been around for a really long time. I was dealing with them longer ago than I should mention. And many long-time investors would have become familiar with the structure when Telstra first listed, which was a couple of decades ago. They were also very popular with self-managed super funds as a strategy to get some leverage into their portfolios prior to the introduction of the LRBA regime in 2007. But that doesn't mean they've become less popular. So what are warrants and how do they work? Liz, thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks, Gemma. So as you say, warrants have been around a long time, at least 20 years. And warrants really are just a structure. So the ASX, for example, classifies them in two broad ranges, one trading style warrants and one investment style warrants. Okay. So a warrant can, you know, be lots of different things depending on what type of warrant an investor's looking for. There's probably 8-9 different types of warrants. So on the trading style warrants, investors tend to trade in and out. It's shorter term. They can go long or short, meaning they might anticipate the market or the stock to go up or down. And it's a shorter term type of trade. On the investment style warrants, that's the usually your instalment warrants. As you said, Telstra, when they came to the market years ago through the public float, the Commonwealth Bank, where the government said you can buy these shares in two parts. Mm-hmm. And so that was hugely successful with the retail mums and dads market. And a number of banks thought, well, that's a great idea. Let's use this instalment receipt process from Telstra, T1, T2, T3, mm-hmm. with shares. So now you can buy shares in two payments through the instalment structure. And that's more the investment style warrants, which tend to be longer term. People hold it maybe for a couple of months over a dividend period, or even longer, especially in their self-managed super fund.
Okay, so it's interesting to consider those two different types and then also the wider range that is available. We do need to, I guess, let's start with the investment style because that's more likely to be where our investors are starting. So investment style, T1 might be a really great way to explain how they work.
So with a T1 float, Telstra, I can't actually remember, it was so long ago, but let's say Telstra was $4. Mm. So instead of buying Telstra for $4, you would buy it for example $2.50 and make that $1.50 payment later. I mean, some people like to think of it as a bit of a lay-by concept. Mm-hmm. So you're buying Telstra at $2.50, knowing that you'll pay the other part, the $1.50, down the track so that you then fully have paid for the shares. In the meantime though, even though you've only paid $2.50 for your Telstra instalment receipt at that time, you get all the dividends and franking credits along the way. So that concept has translated to the instalment warrant. Mm-hmm. You're buying shares in two payments. So if you take an example like Telstra at $3, some investors might go, oh, I'd like to only put in less capital, for example, $1, mm-hmm. and pay the $2 later. Some investors might go, oh, I'm happy to pay half-half. I'll pay the $1.50 now and $1.50 later. So in something like Telstra, you might have, 10 different instalment warrants with different gearing levels, so different second payments.
So you make a really, really important point there though, which is it is gearing. It's not like a lay-by where you've paid half and you go back and pay the other half later, but you haven't borrowed anything to do it. This you're effectively borrowing in order to fund the second part later.
Absolutely. So that second part later, like a loan product, you pay interest on it to a bank. Mm-hmm. So think of it as a loan product, but the loan on an instalment warrant is limited recourse. Mm-hmm. Meaning, unlike taking a traditional loan, like a home loan, you don't potentially have to pay back that loan. Right. Now, when would you not pay back that loan? Basically when your asset is worth less than your loan. So let's take an example during the GFC, Gemma. Mm. We had shares like Centro Property, ABC Learning, Babcock and Brown. Now you've taken an instalment warrant loan to buy these securities you wouldn't have paid back the loan.
Right, okay. So it's limited recourse, not just to your other assets. And to my general definition of limited recourse is none of your other assets are at risk. You are only obligated to pay back the loan for that asset, and in the event that you don't, they take that asset as security. In this situation, the one that you used as an example, which I hadn't really contemplated, is that asset's gone to zero anyway. So my mum used to refer to it as Bobcat and Brown. I don't know why that's still in my mind, but anyway, Babcock and Brown has gone to zero. You therefore owe nothing in that situation?
Absolutely.
Well, that's an interesting one.
And that's why instalment warrants is one of the forms of gearing that is allowable in a self-managed super fund. In self-managed super fund or in your super fund, under the CIS legislation, you can't put a charge over an asset. Mm. The loan's got to be limited recourse. And as you know, Gemma, most people in their portfolio tend to have more than one share. You know, they might have a number of banks, you know, mining stock, Telstra. So if one does turn into Bobcat and Brown, Babcock and Brown.
I've ruined it for everybody now. Everyone will call it Bobcat and Brown from now on.
They will. Your other shares in that portfolio isn't used to offset that particular loan.
Yeah, right. Okay, so you've got a lot of security around that, which is great. But it is a borrowing and you do pay interest. So can you talk about how that works? So you've also made the point that your level of gearing can differ quite dramatically. So whether you want to pay 20% of the share value up front or 30% or 50%, there are different instalments that give you that option. I imagine they have different interest rates and terms as well.
So the different types of instalment warrants. Mm-hmm. So investors have to, you know, can work out what suits them. Do they, for example, want to receive the dividend as cash in their bank account, mm-hmm. or do they want that dividend to help pay down the loan? Mm-hmm. So one's known as a self-funding instalment and one's just the regular instalment where you receive the dividends as cash. So within the instalment structure, you pay the interest on the loan. So I like to compare it is you compare it back to an investment property. Mm-hmm. If you wanted to buy a $1 million investment property, mm-hmm. and the bank was going to lend you $600,000, mm-hmm. you put in $400,000,
yep.
and you pay interest on your loan.
Yep.
So same concept here. And then the interest rate, depending on the structure, can be quite standard. Mm-hmm. So it can be standard across the suite of instalment warrants, mm-hmm. That have a stop loss, or instalments with a put option, which is a little bit like an insurance. Mm-hmm. Now that can vary and will range. So to give you an example, if you're going to buy something like the banks or Telstra with a put option style instalment warrant, the overall rate will be lower than say if you wanted to buy it for something a little bit more volatile like Bellamy's or Fortescue.
Right, fair enough.
But you can always go to the issuer and just ask them what's the overall interest cost for each warrant.
Right, okay. And there are some fees, I imagine, embedded in it as well, but you'll be able to see clearly what the cost is of taking out that instalment. Or that warrant, more to the point.
Mm. Yeah, so everything is usually wrapped up in that interest rate and mm-hmm. there's no other fees.
Okay.
So you just, everything will, if you're told the interest rate is, for example, 6.3%, everything is wrapped up in that rate.
Okay. And you can also buy diversified ones, right? You can buy them over a basket of products. You don't have to just buy them over individual stocks.
You don't have to buy them over individual stocks, but to make it a basket, you normally have to do that through something like an ETF, okay. or an LIC. And right. the reason for that is we can't cross collateralize your assets. So if you've got a basket and one turns into Babcock and Brown, we don't take the other assets. So through say an ETF, and they've become very popular. Mm. We've got 150 warrants just on ETFs and LICs alone.
Wow. So with these longer term investment style warrants, people are buying them, I imagine, because they believe there's longer term potential in the investment itself. So they go, I really like the idea of buying into the S&P 500 or the ASX 200. I'll buy the ETF, but with a warrant, and that will allow me to get more upside. And I'm happy to pay a bit of interest cost to do that. Is that the logic behind it?
Absolutely. It's very similar, I suppose, in concept and why some people borrow to buy property. You think over the longer term, there's going to be capital growth. So in the example here, you know, what mainly investors buy instalment warrants, there are a few different types of investors. We see most of the investors through instalment warrants being self-managed super funds or people are saving for their super fund. So I reckon about 80% of that is coming from super fund money or self-managed super funds.
That's interesting. Okay.
And then you also have younger investors who have a longer time horizon, and they're really using that gearing to grow their portfolio over time in the long term. We also have some investors use the instalment warrants, especially over dividend periods. So it's very popular over things like the banks. They'll buy National Bank instalment warrant, and then over the dividend period, they might hold it for 2-3 months, mm-hmm. and then they'll switch to another Telstra or Woolworths. Because I suppose the thing which I haven't highlighted mm-hmm. with the instalment warrant, so say if the instalment warrant will go back to Telstra, pays a dividend of, say, 20 cents a year, mm-hmm. you receive the dividend on the full 100%, mm-hmm. but you're only paying interest costs on, for example, 50%. Mm-hmm. And so, depending on, obviously, the shares and the level of gearing, you can find that these are positively geared.
So that's a really interesting point. With an investment property, first of all, you're not switching in and out of it very quickly because the transaction costs are enormous by the time you take stamp duty and everything else into consideration. But because income for those sorts of assets is paid weekly, you can't really arbitrage on your income time periods, right? You've got to hold it for that entire period to get all of the income, and you've got to pay interest over that entire period to get the income. Whereas with dividends, which are generally paid half yearly, you can hold it for a very short period of time, only pay interest costs for that short period of time, but get the full benefit of a half year dividend.
Exactly, and that's why that's one of the most popular strategies. People really switching in and out of, you know, high dividend yield stocks over the dividend period using instalment warrants.
Do you see that with self-managed super funds in pension phase? Because generally you would say to a self-managed super fund or anything in pension phase, gearing's not for you, right? You're not looking for that level of risk, and generally it will reduce your yield, not increase it. And yet in this scenario, it's actually quite an attractive option for improving the yield if that's something you're trying to achieve.
It's hard for us to say because we'll see that a holder is a self-managed super fund, but we quite
what the underlying structure is, yeah.
But no, we do know of some self-managed super funds in pension phase who use instalment warrants. Obviously, you know, you don't want to gear your whole self-managed super fund, and it's usually a portion of the self-managed super fund using the strategy.
Yeah, so if you were doing it with 5 or 10% of the portfolio, that's not a big problem. That's a really interesting one, and because you have that downside protection, so if it goes to zero, which obviously hope never happens, but were that to happen, the rest of your portfolio is not at risk, it's only that single asset.
Correct. You'll lose the equity you've put in. You can always lose the equity you've put in, but you can't lose any more.
Right. How do the interest rates compare to other types of borrowing? So there's one obvious feature of the borrowing that is different to margin lending, for example, which is it's limited recourse. So margin lending is the other type of borrowing that a lot of people like to use over equities. How do the costs compare?
So margin lending, the rates are quite variable depending on your size of your loan, but it's flat for whatever instrument, whatever share you buy. Mm-hmm. With instalment warrants, it can be a little bit different depending on the share that you buy. Right. So if you just go 50% geared on Telstra, self-funding instalment warrant or an ETF, it might only be around 5.3%.
Right.
But then if you pick something like Fortescue or you know Bellamy's or Newcrest, it's going to be more expensive. And the other thing to note is obviously you can't use margin lending in your super fund or self-manage, so you because it has to be a limited recourse loan, which is what this structure is.
Yeah, so there are only two that I'm aware of limited recourse loans you can use that are constructed like a margin loan but with no margin calls mm-hmm. for self-managed super funds.
Yes.
They're only generally used by very sophisticated large funds. They're not mum and dad type arrangements, but people do use them. We have one here, which
yes.
is why I know about it. but instalments are much, to be frank, much easier to access and a more vanilla type product for people to use in this environment.
Yeah, it is. It's you just what you would need
it's
is you
need
all packaged
and done for you.
Correct.
For a start,
the bear
yeah.
trust is set up for you. So that's all set up, and you're just buying a security. So if you buy a Telstra instalment warrant, it'll just sit with your other shares, your CommBank, your BHP shares, your Woolworths shares in your portfolio on NabTrade.
So when you look at it online, what does it look like? What's the code?
So they always have 6-letter code, and the first 3 letters is the actual underlying. So it'll be Woolworths, WOW. Mm-hmm. The fourth letter tells you what type of instalment it is. Mm-hmm. So if it's an S, it means it's self-funding instalment. If it's an I, it's an instalment that you receive the dividends for. If it's a K, it's a mini, which is a trading warrant. The fifth letter mm-hmm. shows who the issuer is, which bank is issuing this warrant. So mm-hmm. O or C is Citi. Mm-hmm. And then the last letter is simply just the series, because in Telstra, we may have 20 warrants and we just go A, B, C, D, E, F, G, and you're just selecting that particular series.
And the series will be effectively the amount of borrowing within it and all those sorts of things.
Correct.
Yeah, right. Okay, so that's quite clear. People can work those things through. There are opportunities then for people to work through. So how do people understand what series are available and so on? Where do you get that information from?
Several places. You can get it from, say, NAB Trade on your trading account, mm-hmm. or you can come to the Citi website, mm-hmm. and it's very easy to find. You can just select, for example, NAB shares, instalment warrant, and it'll have all the instalment warrants with the different gearing levels, mm-hmm. or you can go to the ASX or Chi-X as well.
Okay, so there's plenty of areas where they'll just list out, here are all the different series, here are the different, I guess, constructions of those series, so this is what you would be looking to do within each of them. And then you look up the price. Tell me how the price works.
So the price is, so let's go back to, say, Telstra, and say Telstra is trading at $3, and you've picked an instalment warrant where you pay a dollar now mm-hmm. and $2 later. So the price that you see is always your equity.
Right.
It's always the share price, being Telstra, mm-hmm. less your second payment, mm-hmm. so the $3 less your $2. So obviously you're putting in a dollar, mm-hmm. so your Telstra instalment here would be worth a dollar mm. plus any prepaid fees. So if right. you've prepaid your interest costs mm. and it's worth 10 cents, you pay $1.10 mm. so that when you sell it early, you get a refund of that interest cost.
Interesting. Okay. So how do you make the decision about the prepayment of costs and so on, and how do you make it?
So there are many different types of instalment warrants, as mm. I mentioned. We've got ones where you have prepaid interest, mm-hmm. and we've got ones that you don't prepay interest and the interest capitalises.
Okay.
So easiest way is to go to an issuer and just say, you know, I really want an instalment warrant that's 50% geared, but I want to receive the dividends as cash and I don't want to prepay the interest. And then we can guide you to which type of instalment.
Is already available. So it's already constructed.
Yes.
You basically just pick the one that meets your needs, and there's a lot of different ones available if it's a widely traded stock.
Absolutely.
Okay, lovely. All right, so that should help people make a decision about what they're looking for. Can you talk us through self-funding warrants? Because they're quite an interesting one.
So self-funding warrants is a subset of the instalment warrant, mm-hmm. and we're similar to what we had before, but the specific feature of a self-funding instalment warrant is that the dividends are used to pay down the loan. Mm. And they're the most popular type of instalment warrants.
Oh,
because, yeah, okay. people hold it for longer term. These, mm. you know, people hold it for longer term, and over time, they're seeing their loan potentially get paid down.
Yeah.
So that in 5 or 10 years' time, portion of that loan's paid down, if not all of that loan's paid down. Now, if that loan isn't paid down by expiry, just like any loan product, you can go to the issuer, the bank, and say, I want to refinance it effectively mm-hmm. and keep going, or I want to pay the rest off and take my shares unencumbered, or I can just simply sell it where you'll get the value of the shares, less the loan, and your equity back.
Okay, so it's pretty straightforward. It's really interesting. That's the most popular type. And are they most popular for large, widely held stocks, or for things that people are a little bit more outside the top 20, for example? Where do you see it?
It's quite interesting. So in your self-managed super fund, a lot of the high yield stocks are very popular using the self-funding instalments. But we are seeing more and more flow go into some of the smaller cap names, especially the thematic names.
Yeah.
And
you
see that.
Yeah. Mm.
We see that
people looking for growth at the moment.
Especially in the trading style warrants as well.
Okay. So let's talk about trading style warrants. Now, I'm going to be very frank, that's not my area of expertise at all, so I'm as much a novice as anyone listening to this. Talk us through what they are, how they work, and why people use them.
So the trading style warrants, the most popular by far, are called the minis. Mm-hmm. And investors can go long or short, meaning that you don't always have to buy something because you think it's going to go up. Mm-hmm. You can buy a short mini because you think it's going to go down. And there's across the spectrum will issue minis, trading warrants, over to the top 200, even sometimes out to the ASX 300.
Right, okay, yeah. That's interesting.
With the minis, investors, they tend to be more highly geared as well. They might be 80%, 85%, 90%.
Oh, interesting. So people are taking a strong position with these.
Correct. And they might hold it for a short time. Some people hold it just 1 or 2 days, some couple of weeks. Now, with the minis, it's also issued across different asset classes. So we'll do it over shares, but we'll do it over indices. So the ASX 200 futures, international futures like Dow Jones, S&P 500, NASDAQ, and currencies, you know, AUD to FX. That's the most popular of all the currency minis, and also commodities like oil and gold. Okay. The most popular mini is the ASX 200 futures minis. Right. People just take a directional flow, directional position, and they're just trading long or short in the minis.
That's really interesting. Okay, so just for my benefit, in terms of flow, and I guess holdings is less relevant because they are much shorter traded. The longer term style, so the buy and hold versus the trading, what sort of flow do you see?
Look, we see probably the flow is much greater in the minis, the trading in and out, because people are trading in and out. In terms of the, I suppose, how much assets are in each.
The size of the market, yeah.
It's probably fairly close to 50-50%. But the minis book, you will see much larger fluctuations.
Much more active.
So like going into, for example, after Brexit, we saw the US elections. We saw a lot more than we'd ever seen in US S&P 500 shorts and US Dow Jones shorts. People are just going, this is going to be
not
a second Brexit.
People probably regretting that, I imagine.
Some got in, it depends, right, on the timing. So some people did quite well out of that, but if you kept holding on, then no. We see with the mini, so a lot of thematics, as I was saying, you know, as you mentioned, it's come out of just the ASX 20, names that have become really popular, Afterpay, you know, Bellamy's, A2 Milk, things like the lithium space.
So these are all the things that our investors like holding long and holding the actual stock, but you're seeing exactly the same thing in the mini. So the things that people are buying, believing there's a really strong thematic and there's a strong story there longer term, they're also taking the opportunity to trade that pretty actively.
Correct. And with the minis, they can go short as well. So they think it's...
So they go, this is overbought, let's
correct.
Get out of this.
Correct, let's sell out of this. And we actually see more shorts than we see longs in the mini space. And that's exactly as you say, when people want to go long, they'll just buy the share sometimes, or they'll buy an ETF. If they want to go short, it's one of the few ways for investors to buy, to trade that downside in the market.
So this particular side of the market, what kind of investor do you see? I'm guessing a lot fewer self-managed super funds in this space.
Less self-managed super funds. A lot of, you know, people who do a lot of day trading, shorter term type investors.
Okay. So people who are trying to... Do you see a lot of people who have very large, long positions and want to manage at the margin?
So you're saying that...
Yeah, so they would have $1 million portfolio, but they're anxious about a few things, and so they'll put $20,000 into minis to manage some of their risk. Is that, do you see a bit of that sort of thing?
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll get, investors call up and go, I have a large holding of CSL, which hit an all-time record, and go, I think it might fall a little bit, but I don't want to sell my stock. It's going to trigger CGT. I might get... it's effectively a hedge, and... basically protect myself from that, some of that downside. And we see that especially, you know, when we see, you know, things like we've seen petrol prices, for example, go to $1.90 at the Bowser, oil stocks running, oil futures running quite hard, and investors either going short some of the oil stocks or short the oil futures through the minis.
That's really interesting. Okay, so people are using that market to take really active positions, sometimes because they're just really active investors and that's how they like to do it, or active traders more to the point, and then others where they are managing their risk. Because we saw, you know, we were talking about the GFC earlier, we saw during the GFC where people didn't have liquid positions, they got into incredibly large amounts of trouble, and I won't mention which institution it was, but directors, for example, who'd taken margin loans over their company stock because they'd been issued enormous amounts of company stock as directors of the company and senior executives, they took margin loans over it, but it was under escrow, so they couldn't sell it when the market started falling. Some people might be using these sorts of things to manage those sorts of risks.
Yes, we do. I mean, we actually did see that during the GFC, things like ABC Learning. We had employees who use the instalment warrants to take cash out of their existing holdings. And I suppose in hindsight, it was probably one of the better strategies to use gearing on their shares because it did go to zero and they didn't pay back that loan.
So that's one we haven't talked about, which is using it as an equity release strategy for an existing portfolio. And that is, it's different too. So people generally are aware that if you want to release equity from an existing equity portfolio, two different types of equity, from an existing share portfolio, there are different ways you can do that. One is you just take out a margin loan against that using your existing securities as security for the loan and then invest that in the market. So now you're better diversified if you've got one or two large holdings. And a lot of senior executives end up in that position just because they end up with huge amounts of company stock. So they want to diversify. It makes perfect sense. So you can use a margin loan to do it. But one of the risks is if you don't have liquid access to that stock because it's under escrow, get yourself in a bit of trouble if the stock falls. Instalments, interesting way to do it with that equity release.
Correct. I mean, you do, so when we do have an investor's role in their holdings, Blue Sky, we saw that what happened with Blue Sky a couple of months ago. We had investors take out a cash extraction from the Blue Sky instalment warrant. Now, the instalment warrant that we issued for Blue Sky had a stop loss in there.
Right.
And so some investors go, oh, you know, stop losses, what are they? It basically means that if the share falls to a certain level, we'll sell the shares, pay off the loan and pass the remainder back to you. So they're not inherently a good or bad feature. It really depends on what the stock's done. So if you take Blue Sky, for example, the stop loss was set at $8. You're better off selling at
$8. You have to call that a good thing in that situation,
correct,
right, seeing where it is now.
And so it's all about, you know, what the stock does and how you manage it.
Okay, so that's a really interesting one. So if someone's got an existing very large holding in a particular stock, can they come to you and do the equity release?
Absolutely. We've been investors and traders call us all the time and they'll say, I'm really interested in, you know, Afterpay. Can you issue some minis on Afterpay? Or Kidman. We want some
instalments
on Kidman.
We see that in our most traded quite frequently, actually, Kidman Resources and a few of the others like that.
So yeah, no, we do get requests and then we can look to issue one, obviously, once we get our risk approvals.
Okay, so it's really, for a very active market, and it's a sophisticated market, definitely on the trading side, but you seem to have a fairly active relationship with investors. And does that include mum and dad investors? They contact you directly and ask for stuff?
Yeah, absolutely. So a lot of mums and dads say, you know, a lot of them are self-directed. They really know, you know, they know their portfolio, they're managing it, they're trading it, and they will call us and they'll ask us, oh, I actually see that you've got five Kidman, but I want something higher geared, lower geared, and they'll set a request with us.
Okay, that's quite an interesting position because there's not a lot of other products like that where, you know, they're actively managed to investor needs and trader needs and so on. Any other sort of strategies investors might want to think about with different parts of the warrant market?
So the most popular strategy we have is probably the, because we see the most in the ASX 200 futures short. So that's the most popular strategy across our warrants book. Investors, you know, just trading in and out of the index. So instead of taking a view on a particular stock, they're just taking a view on the overall market. You know, they're thinking, for example, if there's expected more rhetoric coming out about trade tensions, they might go, I think I'm going to go short the ASX 200, and they'll just trade those positions. So a lot of, on the trading side, it's a lot about thematics, and it's investors wanting to go short through our product to either provide a hedge or just take that view.
So again, we've talked a little bit about the costs. There's no investment in the universe that is sort of risk-free, apart from US Treasuries and a couple of other things, and they're only risk-free to the extent that you get your money back, right? It doesn't mean that there is no loss, if that makes sense. So risks that people need to consider, they're obviously very different for the different types of product, and then also any additional sort of costs they need to factor in and so on.
So absolutely. So firstly, with costs, different types of warrants have different costs. So an instalment warrant with a stop loss would be 6.3%. Mm-hmm. But if you use a mini and you decide to go short the index, it's 4.75. If you decide to go use a mini and go long a stock, it's 6.35. But if you go short the stock, it's 2.15%. Oh, and it's okay. Different for currencies and different for commodities. So absolutely, you've got to find out what the costs are. In terms of risk,
sorry, and they're all relatively easy to find out, these sorts of things. They're published and easy to access.
It's at the bottom of each of our pricing sheets. So if you click onto the minis pricing sheet, at the bottom of the pricing sheet will be the cost. Mm-hmm. Now, in terms of risk, obviously these are leveraged products and some of them are very highly leveraged. Mm-hmm. So investors need to be aware of, you know, all the risks with leverage. You know, it magnifies your losses, not just your gains. Any of these warrants can go to zero, so if the assets fall, you can basically lose all your money. You can't lose more than that, but you can lose your capital in these products.
Okay. And one question which I find quite interesting, actual investor types who are doing these, directional stuff, the traders that I used to work with when I first started, they would trade their own book overnight. They would just take a position, come back, fix it in the morning, depending on how it went. Do you see quite a bit of that, people trading their own book if they're sort of very active in markets?
Yeah, I mean, we've got a wide range of investors and traders, from, you know, mums and dads to people who are running managed discretionary accounts. A lot of our trades are, as you say, personal trades for brokers themselves, you know, managing their own share trading position. We've got boutique funds who use our products too.
Okay. The other one that is important, and it's a fairly straightforward answer, but important to clarify, is that the borrowing costs are tax deductible, right? To the extent that it is an investment borrowing.
So it depends on the type of product. So the first one, an investment style warrant, the interest is deductible. Now, because when you receive the income, that's also taxable because it's deemed as income. On the flip side, with a trading warrant, the interest isn't deductible, but the dividend isn't also deemed income.
Interesting.
Yeah, so with the minis, the trading product, any pass-through of the dividends is just reflected in the price. So for example, you buy it at a dollar, you get a contract note from NabTrade, you sell it at $1.30, you have a second contract note. And even if you hold that through the dividend period, that's reflected in the price.
Okay. Well, that's quite interesting for people to know. And does their status as a trader versus an investor matter, or is it not relevant in this situation?
It would matter. So, for example, I think under the tax guide, if you're obviously a trader and you're earning income,
it might as a business,
correct. So it might sit on, you know, the revenue account. Within all our PDSs, we do have a tax opinion.
Right.
So investors can give that tax opinion to their accountant. On the investment product, we provide a tax statement which gives your income, your franking credits, and your interest deductible.
Yeah. So that's really interesting. People can just take it to their accountant or their tax agent at the end of the year. So it's not dissimilar in that respect to another managed type product where you get it all done for you.
Correct, yeah. We'll supply the statements. If for the investment product, you just simply need to give it to your accountant.
Okay, that's really cool. So if an investor is interested in this, they want to learn more, it's obviously a sphere where learning more is really helpful because there's a wide universe of opportunities there and you can take different positions on a very wide spectrum of things. Where do they go?
So a number of places. They can go to the exchanges like the ASX or Chi-X, or they can come to our website. We've got trading guides, we've got brochures, we've got the PDSs, which has all the information about features and risks, but we also have videos on how the products work. There's lots of different places to get your information. You can go to the exchanges like the ASX or Chi-X, lots of information there. You can go to the issuers like Citi. On our website, we've got PDSs, trading guides, brochures, as well as a video library on all the different types of warrants. So our website is au.cityfirst.com.
Okay, so Citi, spell that for us.
C-I-T-I FIRST.com.
City, most people would put a Y in there, which is not going to help them if they're looking for that site. Oh, good. Liz, thank you so much. I think that's an incredibly constructive introduction for people. I think thinking about some of those trading strategies is really valuable. People with self-managed super funds, some of those dividend opportunities, really interesting. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Gemma. It was great being here.
If you would like to learn more, please consider going to the City website, alternatively looking at the ASX or TriX for more information. As always, thank you so much for listening to this episode of Your Wealth. We always love to hear from you, so if you have any feedback or suggestions for future topics, please just email us at yourwealth@nab.com.au. I'm Gemma Dale. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for listening to Your Wealth with Gemma Dale. To stay up to date, please subscribe to this podcast series or email us at yourwealth@nab.com.au.
Please note that any advice provided in this podcast has been prepared without taking into account your objectives, financial circumstances, or needs. Before acting, you should consider the appropriateness of the information. To find out more, please visit nab.com.au.